This is Pure Decking show number 358 for Thursday, July 25th, whatever the year is. It's the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and taking nostalgia trips on eBay. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Mad Men. What's going on, Mad Men?
Looking at Donald Trump's house of wings and drinking a beer.
I didn't know Donald Trump had a house of wings.
I'll link the commercial here in a moment.
And we have RU. What's going on, RU?
Not much, man. Lamenting a shitty news cycle that is this week.
Yeah, pretty rough. But I have Knob Creek, so, you know, there's always that. Not to mention, you know, work driving me to drink. Like, a lot.
Current climate, man. It doesn't take much to drive anyone to drink.
Yeah. Still, though, man, it just gets fucking old. You know, security makes one little change, then every fucking problem that anybody has from now to the end of time must be because security changed something.
You are the beast of burden.
Well, we've got a lazy... We've got a couple of lazy techs on the help desk who have figured out that, you know, saying, oh, that's something security did is a magic word that means they no longer have to work on an issue.
No, you don't have lazy. You've just got creative.
I can't watch Netflix anymore.
Yeah, something security did. You ought to email them and make them fix it. Fuck off. Yeah, we've gotten some real winners for that through that at the moment here lately too. It's like my computer won't run Office, and you almost have blocked it. No, I'm pretty sure your hard drive's just dying. We're not blocking Office. We pay for that. It's on the list of things not to block.
How would that be going through a firewall?
Office 365, magic. But you don't know. In this case, yeah, it was the app, so I don't know. I don't fucking know. That's the best part. We're getting some of these. What we're discovering is that the issue may not actually be much of a technical problem. It's poor communication skills. It's that magic of figuring out what the fuck they're on about. Because... Like, you go check the logs. No, we haven't blocked anything from them today. I don't know what they're on about. Well, I don't know. They're spittling into the microphones. I was like, okay, well. Well, if news doesn't get more interesting soon, decking may end up being an every other week thing. It's pretty rough this week.
It'll pick back up, man. There'll be another security flaw somewhere.
Oh, there always is. VLC, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, we're gonna go to Mars. That's what it's gonna be. Trip to Mars.
Yep, Madman, get in the trebuchet. VLC. You're going first. Yeah, there's a somebody published a finding on VLC. Turns out VLC had already fixed it.
Oh, okay. I'm like, fuck, I run VLC. What do I need patch?
On some Linux distros, one of the libraries that VLC calls may not have been updated based on the repo. But the Windows builds are fine. I think most of the builds are fine. Most of the Linux builds are fine. So I just skimmed the article. I don't remember which one was which. But it was one of these things where somebody scared a bunch of people, and it was just nothing. So
I was going to say, if it's been patched, then... Nothing.
There were some proof of concept videos floating around that could crash VLC, but you know, apparently the Windows version was already fixed a while back. So, anyways, This one's pretty funny, though. It's from Business Insider. A contract programmer is facing 10 years in jail for inserting a logic bomb into a spreadsheet that caused the company to keep rehiring him.
I'm not even mad when I was reading this article. I'm like, you know what? Like, when I first read it, I'm like, yeah, fuck you, buddy. Fuck you. And then read the story and we'll get to the crux of it.
We've heard of programmers who secretly automated their jobs, but there's an even darker tale of a contract programmer who tried to force his employer to be dependent on him. Now he's facing up to 10 years in prison, as well as a fine of up to $250,000. David Tinley, 62, pleaded guilty in federal court to a charge of intentional damage to a protected computer. The U.S. Attorney's Office of the Western District of Pennsylvania said in a press release. Tinley had been hired by a U.S. unit of Siemens, the German-based tech conglomerate, to create automated spreadsheets. The company used these spreadsheets to manage orders for electrical equipment. Tinley planted logic bombs in the spreadsheets, the government alleged. Logic bombs are bits of malicious code that disrupt the program when specific conditions are met, like a specific time or a specific date. In this case, logic bombs were timed to go off every few years, the government alleged, causing the spreadsheets to experience glitches like error messages and size changes to on-screen buttons, according to a report from Law 360. When the program glitched, the company would bring Tinley back in to fix it. He fixed the system by pushing back the date in the spreadsheets so they would keep working. So that's what all it was he programmed the things to intentionally go silly, and then he would just go push back the activation date a couple of years so that he could charge them, you know, his consulting fee and then just go about his day.
Read the rest of the article, man. He never charged to come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it didn't cost the company a cent.
Then he was doing it wrong.
I think he was just, touching base sort of thing. Hey, got any more contracts for me?
Keeping them in
the forefront of his mind. Because if you read it, it only fucked up every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I think he was just keep touching base with the company. I don't believe he deserved jail time because he wasn't defrauding anyone.
Well, yeah, if he never charged them for the fix.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, time down, company could claim that cost him money that way. But apart from that,
what these spreadsheets are being used for. How much a minute is that time down?
Mm.
Yeah. I don't think it's worth jail time, man, because he wasn't defrauding anybody out of money.
He was busted in 2016 when he was away on vacation and Siemens had to put an urgent order through the system, which had begun glitching, according to Law 360 report. The circumstance reportedly forced Tinley to share with employees his passwords that protected the system code, revealing the logic bomb. Tinley's lawyer said he never made any money by being hired to go in and fix the spreadsheets, arguing that his motivation was to protect his proprietary work, according to Law 360. Even so, prosecutors argued that the situation met the $5,000 in damages needed to label it a felony because Siemens spent about $42,000 into an investigation into the damages he may have caused. So because he triggered an investigation worth more than $5,000, they're saying it's a felony fraud, which I kind of get where they're coming from. They're like, okay, yeah. Here's a logic bomb. We don't know what else this fucker's done. I get that.
It is a deterrent.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I agree with the logic on the law side of things, but not a lawyer. But I get where the company is coming from because they had to validate that he hadn't done anything else. Tinley's plea included an agreement to pay restitution for those costs and forfeit two laptops. Well, if this is, laptops holding the data for the code, they're probably old, if he's doing this every couple of years, right? It's like, yeah, let me go in the closet and find those for you. That's in addition to his sentence, where he'll face the prospect of jail time and a fine. It's not unusual for programmers found guilty of planting logic bombs to go to jail. In 2008, a system administrator was sentenced to 30 months over his failed logic bomb at his employer Medco after it was spun off to Merrick and he feared being laid off. The Register reported at the time, the system administrator pleaded guilty to planting the bomb, which was designed to delete a bunch of data after he left the company. flaws in the way it was coded kept it from going off at the time. So you're not even a good programmer. And was caught after he tried to fix it, prosecutors alleged. In 2018, an Atlanta judge sentenced a database programmer to 2 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to planting a logic bomb in the U.S. Army's payroll databases. The Army's not a good one for fraud. They'll shoot you. ZDNet reported. He planted the bomb after his employer lost the contract to continue managing those databases. The bomb did go off, deleting data that prevented the U.S. Army reservists from being paid and deployed on time. Okay, that's pretty low. The Army spent $2.6 million to investigate and repair the systems. They did restore all the data, and the man was ordered to pay $1.5 million in restitution and receive jail time. So, you know, intentionally sabotaging a system. Oh, man, I've been on so many sides of this. I know where he's coming from. You know, you're right. It probably was along the lines of just keeping him in the Rolodex so any other jobs that come up, he's got a chance for contract, makes it look like he's the hero. Some of them, they do it just so that they can, you know, have that hero. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm the guy who fixes it, you know?
Bit of Munchausen's, you think?
Could be.
Make it sick so you look like the hero fixing it.
I've known a few sysadmins who did that.
That's some pretty fucking ordinary ego stroking right there. That you'd do that just to feel validated. Like, you've got fucking serious issues, man.
Well, I knew some guys who did it because I had to do the investigation. So it's like, yeah, you figure out what's going on real quick. It's like, yeah, you're flagging your account for shit, dude. Come on. And, knew one guy who intentionally locked every other admin out of a system so that he was the admin of it because he insisted that he was the only one who could be trusted to fix that system. So, after...
what is it with sysadmins and their fucking ego? I see it on some of these, like, these admins on some of these websites and shit, that just once they become an administrator, they just go fucking mental with power.
Yeah. I guess it's, you know, the whole you're running the system, you're the one keeping it up, so you know... stroke the ego any way you can. And a lot of people who put in the time to become sysadmins aren't the, you know, the top of the social hierarchy, so to speak.
I hear what you're saying. May not exactly be the alpha in the jungle.
No. Now, that said, I've known a few who, weren't, and they were fairly decent at it, and they didn't do that kind of shit. So it's... I don't know, man. It's interesting. It's just like everybody else. You know, why do people do shit, right? Especially stupid shit.
But I wonder how much time's actually been served for this, not just sentenced.
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. I'd imagine most of them are fairly well behaved in jail. They're probably terrified. I mean, if I went to prison, I'd be trying to organize D&D games and then realizing, the guy with the shank, 14's totally a critical hit. Because, you know, at first it's like, well, this would be a way to pass the time. And then you realize, no.
Fuck it, let's break the Risk board out.
Yeah.
That's how we really make friends. Let's play Risk.
So, yeah, I could see that.
If only prison time was just like going to the game store every weekend for a game, you know, might be inclined to let the old morals slide a bit.
Well, if I could get solitary and an internet connection.
Oh, dude. Yeah, fuck yeah. That's not a problem, you know. Guaranteed, you know, certain up and speed up and down.
You know, 22 hours a day of uninterrupted solitary and, you know, a proper internet connection. You know, yeah.
I'll do 5 years on my head. You know,
I can see that. Like, what kind of bandwidth do you get in prison? You don't get bandwidth. you monsters.
Exactly. It's a human right.
It's like,
who do I talk to about waxing my balls? The human right.
What kind of beer do you guys have on tap in here?
And we get that, vintage toilet wine. You get up in the morning, clean your cell, go to breakfast, come back, look, fire up Steam, get on fucking TeamSpeak. Yeah, it's a little noisy because there's shanking going on down the street.
You know, I bet if they introduced that, prison riot rates would go down a lot.
Well, they're pushing to allow weed into prisons in certain states now. How long before?
Decriminalizing having weed in the prison in certain states now.
Oh, you know where it's going to lead, madman. Think about it. If they gave prisoners access to weed, I'm thinking the recidivative rate's going to go through the fucking roof, but I think the violence has dropped down a bit.
Have you seen the prices in a PX, dude, in prison?
Yeah, I hear it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, you're not going there because you want a pack of smokes.
They're probably the same price here as Australia. At least you're allowed to smoke in your prisons.
They thought smoke-free once. Then the death, count exceeded what we thought was good.
Yeah, we're sticking with the whole no smoking thing, and the violence just keeps getting worse and worse.
There's a guy who does a YouTube channel, after prison or something like that.
Oh, the two dudes, the black guy and the white guy?
No, this is just a one guy. And
okay.
Let's see if I can find it. But I watched a couple of those. It was pretty interesting. So
yeah, I'll check that out because I watched this one where this black guy and a white guy talk about how you will be in a gang, how you will get fucked in the ass, and you will pass those drugs on to the Norteños and the Northern Mexicans. What's and shit. Like they're just giving it to you straight. Like if you think you're going in to have a good time with your buddies, no, we own your ass.
Yeah,
and if we tell you to do this, you're going to do it or you're going to eat the curb.
Yeah,
cool. I'll check this out.
It's been a little bit since I've looked at his channel, but he had some videos that were really interesting on showing, shit he did to get by. Apparently, he learned to do tattoos in prison.
Wow.
And was showing how they made prison tattoo guns and tattoo needles from guitar strings. He did show that one. That was interesting. So, but yeah, he tells a lot of stories about... it doesn't sound like someplace you really actually want to go, joking aside.
Oh, no, man. That's... It's one of my... I wouldn't say it's a fear, but it's not something I'm looking forward to in the future. But wrong think.
Right. So...
I don't know, man. Yeah, you got to deter these guys from putting logic bombs in there or back doors to, get into companies and stuff. But,
well, the best, honestly, the best deterrence to that is to not have one guy who can do that. Not to have only one sysadmin or one programmer who can, can lock everything out and control what everybody else can see. You have to have a team, and management should have multiple backdoor passwords. And by backdoor, I usually just mean like a sysadmin account that, has a password that is, printed out or written down on, like a break me card it's locked in the, P.O. box or a vault or a safe somewhere. Not just in case you've got a shitty sysadmin who's in there planting logic bombs, but, what if you've got a handful of sysadmins and they're out sick or hit by a bus or, they all walk out at once because they're really upset with your management practices. I've basically seen that happen where the entire sysadmin team quits at the same time. That's not fun.
because no, that's probably good practice.
You know, so you need a way to get back into these systems, and that's where password vaulting systems and things like that are actually a really good investment. But nobody wants to put the time, effort, or money into them because it's hard, it's expensive, it's not glamorous. You're not moving the company forward. But you know, if anything ever happens, you'll be really glad you did. But at the same time, it's like, okay, how do you quantify the return? You know, we're not getting a return on investment or a return on investment for that. Great. What's the ROI on your fire extinguishers? Because that's basically what it is.
Yeah. That's a prevention tool.
So it's a prevention and management system. It's not going to make you money, but it's going to save you money if in the event that something happens. And, you know, is something going to happen this year? Probably not. Next year? Probably less likely. In the next 5 years? Yeah. You're probably going to have an incident or two. The next 10, I'd say yes. You know, is it going to be an insider doing a logic bomb? Maybe, maybe not. Is it going to be getting hacked? Maybe, maybe not. Is it going to be just a bad fuck up? Is it going to be your sysadmins are on a plane taking a company trip to go to a conference and the plane crashes? And maybe they're
That's
not
dark.
Even maybe they're not even dead. They're just all in the hospital and unavailable. Or okay,
or in the Andes eating each other.
They've all been kidnapped by Sasquatch. Or, you know, much more common, a flu goes around and the entire IT staff is out, or your entire admin team is out with the flu and unavailable. Or horrible food poisoning and they're out for a few days and you need to be able to get back into your systems. This is why you need shit like this. So, you know, it doesn't even have to be shit like that. You know, let's pick something happy. You have a sysadmin team, you know, your sysadmin team all pulled together on the lottery ticket and they win and they all quit the next day. Now what are you going to do?
Your sysadmin got married and is on his honeymoon and the system goes down and he's not answering his phone because he's ringing another bell at this time.
Contaminated bourbon hits the market. Yeah, you know, we can speculate this shit all day long. I actually used to use at work the example of kidnapped by Bigfoot and abducted by aliens just because, you know, the whole fire, flood, hit by a car, hit by a bus thing gets old. You know, if you got a dual sysadmin team and they have a horrible car crash by wrecking into each other in the parking lot and they're both going to be in the hospital for a month and you need to bring in a contractor to run the systems for, you know, a month or two, you need to be able to get them into the systems. And, you know, calling up a sysadmin who's just been out of surgery is not a good way to go.
Or more on this story, how many people should you hire to write one piece of code?
So,
'cause I know what they were thinking is, we just need these spreadsheets. This one guy can do it.
You can hire one person to write the code, but then you get two other people to look it over before implementing.
So it depends on what kind of shop you're in, but you, generally RU's pretty much got the gist of it, that you'll want one person to do the development or part of the development, and then you'll usually want a separate person to do code review, and then you'll want a third person to do QA testing. And usually after that, you're going to want an end user to do a, you know, user acceptance review, and then you publish
the thing.
And
then those three need to be there in the network at the time when you go live.
Yes.
Preferably not at 9 a.m. on a Monday in case everything falls the fuck over.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. If you're not going to run through all those layers, you at least need two. You need one person to write it, one person to do the code review before it goes live. And it's not a trust thing. I mean, it's a people fuck up. You know?
Or you can go to Craigslist, hire someone there, and then just run the code and hope for the best.
Well, okay, even if you do the Craigslist thing, you still want somebody you trust to review the code before you run it
to make sure
it's not going to steal all your bitcoins or something. I mean... So, anyways, let's move on here. This next one is from Ars Technica, but it's all over the place. U.S. Attorney General William Barr today launched a new front on the Fed's ongoing fight against consumer encryption, railing against the common security practice and lamenting the victims in its wake. The deployment of warrant-proof encryption is already imposing huge costs on society, Barr claimed in remarks at a cybersecurity conference held at Fordham University Tuesday morning. Barr added that encryption seriously degrades law enforcement's ability to detect and prevent a crime before it occurs. That is not law enforcement's job. Law enforcement's job is to detect and punish criminals after they have committed a crime, not actively prevent it. If they can prevent it, that's nice. That's not actually the mandate. As well as making eventual investigation and prosecution of the crime more difficult. The existence of encryption means converting the internet and communications into a law-free zone that criminals will happily take advantage of to do more crimes, Barr added, likening it to a neighborhood that local cops have abandoned. The cost of encryption, he said, is measured in victims who might have been saved from crime if law enforcement had the ability to lawfully intercept communications earlier. He also accused text firms of dogmatic posturing, saying lawful backdoor access can be and must be done, adding, "We are confident that there are technical solutions that will allow lawful access to encrypted data and communications by law enforcement without materially weakening the security provided by encryption." In other words, we want this to happen. Nerds, go make it happen.
They can't keep things without backdoors secured. I don't want an open door in anything that touches my checking account or my medical records.
That's just dogmatic posturing, madman.
I don't have a lot of money compared to, you know, many people, but I like my money. I want to keep it. I do intend to retire one day, and if, you know, my 401k gets drained, I'm fucked.
In his diatribe, Barr is only picking up where predecessors left off. In 2017, then-Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein said in an interview that the tech community's absolute position on strong encryption impeded law enforcement and was unreasonable. Federal law enforcement has been a very public encryption face-off with consumer electronics companies, particularly Apple, since 2016. In December 2015, San Bernardino, okay, skip ahead here. A responsible encryption scheme 27, which Barr echoed. I am suggesting that it is well past time for some in the tech community to abandon the posture that a technical solution is not worth exploring and instead turn. They have explored it, dumbass. They've been trying to do it for years. Sorry. And instead turn their considerable talent to developing products that will reconcile good cybersecurity to the imperative of public safety and national security, Barr said.
Think of the children.
I thought he threatened to get laws passed if they didn't do it.
Oh, God, no.
I don't see it in this article. I thought he said something along the lines of, if you don't do this, we'll pass a law and make you do it. But it's like, maybe that was just hyperbole from one of the other summaries of his talk. But yeah, they're still pushing on this whole they expect responsible encryption. The problem is it's math. That's not how the math works.
It's encrypted or it's not.
I have actually studied this, okay? I do, in fact, have pieces of paper that validate that I know what I'm talking about with encryption. There are two forms of encryption. Symmetric and asymmetric. Symmetric means the same key that is used to encrypt the data is used to decrypt the data. Asymmetric means a second key is used to decrypt after the first key is used to encrypt. That's all there is. That's all there is to it. Almost 99% of the time, what most of your encryption algorithms are doing is generating, using the key, a random string of characters, noise, bits, and XORing that with your clear text to get your ciphertext. Because this is, and that's a very simple symmetric encryption, right? Asymmetric is way crazier because you have to actually have a separate key that XORs it out differently. So there's a lot more involved with it. So, but with your symmetric, basically, you either have the key or you don't. I'm not even going to worry about explaining how it works. With asymmetric, you either have the decryption key or you or both keys or you don't. So saying that I have to be able to do responsible decryption means that law enforcement must have a means of gaining the key necessary to do the decryption at any time provided, you know, we'll say for a warrant, right? But that's not how the technology works. The technology says, okay, I have a key, and that will turn my encrypted text back into clear text. If I don't have that key, assuming your encryption is written properly and that your software is implemented correctly, which is not always the case. In fact, 9 times out of 10, they attack the implementation, not the encryption. The encryption usually gets weaker over time because computers get faster. So, because the only true known attack against encryption that works on everything is brute force. Trying every key until you get clear text data back. And that's why you hear things like don't use the old 64-bit encryption. Don't use things like MD5. It's because modern computers are fast enough that they can just simply try all the keys until they get the they get the clear text back. Especially if they have a portion of that clear text and know what it should look like, that makes it even easier. But okay. You either have the key or you don't. And except for one-time passwords. No, Cycros, that's a different thing. I am talking about at a mechanical level how encryption works. One-time passwords are an implementation where after I have used that key is thrown away and no longer ever used again. But at its core, it's still doing the same thing, okay? You either have the key or you don't. So, and even with asymmetric, that is true, which means for law enforcement to be able to get the key at any time, either they have to manage the keys and issue them, which is probably what they would like, or they have to be available to them on demand. Well, if you're doing true encryption, you know, true end-to-end point encryption, something like a PGP, where I generate my key and then somebody else generates their key and we are using that to exchange information, and it's all, you know, person to person, there's no company in the middle. The only way that law enforcement can get that key is if somebody provides it to them. So, because again, we're assuming modern encryption where brute force is not a viable alternative. I was just saying brute force doesn't work on OTP crypto because there's no algorithm to brute. Not true. That is not true. So again, you're confusing some technology there, Cycros. One-time passwords are the same thing as regular passwords. It's the same crypto. They're just thrown out after they're done. The lifespan of that key is one use. That's a procedural decision. It has nothing to do with the basis of the technology, which is what I'm talking about. Now, again, and like your SSL connection for websites and stuff like that, there is a lot of stuff like that where that key is only used for a short time and then thrown out and not used again, meaning that brute forcing it is a lot harder because the amount of data you have to play with is less and you've already rotated keys, meaning that, okay, let's say I spent the time and actually managed to brute force and get that connection. Great. That connection was only good for one connection. Next time I go to the site, you got to do it all over again. So the idea is that by the time you've managed to brute force and get that clear text data back, it is no longer useful for you. You're talking about one time pad crypto. For God's sake. Okay. It is the same thing. One-time pads are keys that are used once, and then you throw it out. That is an implementation. It is the same thing. So, anyways, point not really important, but you have the key or you don't. So, for law enforcement to have a back door, somebody has to provide them a key. There's no such thing as encryption where I can use different keys to read and write it. I mean, there's asymmetric, but again, either I have that key or I don't. There's no such thing as a third key that will decrypt it, but it's not the same thing as the user's key. Oh my goodness. So the reason that, you know, technology is taking this stand on encryption is because to do what they're asking requires a three-key encryption that doesn't exist. It requires a different key, a law enforcement key, that we don't have math for. We don't have a formula for that. So they are asking for magic to happen. They're saying, you technology nerds, you just go magic it up and make it happen. Which means what they actually would have to do is Apple or Google or whatever your platform is would have to store the actual encryption keys and then manage access to those keys. Well, as we know, these technology companies routinely don't manage access to things correctly. See the fine Facebook is about to have to pay for their data management practices. You routinely see, I saw an article earlier today where Robinhood, the stock trading platform, was storing passwords in clear text. I mean, these companies don't have a great track record with key management. So if you want to know why everybody gets really mad at the government asking for responsible GUHAC doors, is because at a basic level, there is not a safe way to do it without somebody else managing your keys for you. And if somebody else is managing your keys, you do not have a trusted platform, because I cannot promise that other people aren't accessing that data. That's what things like Telegram are supposed to do, is they're supposed to, you know, establish that tunnel between two devices and use one-time keys and then throw them out when they're done. You know, the idea is that the Telegram servers never see those keys. That's why Apple has been getting in this fight with the FBI over their phones. It's like the key's on the phone. It's not in the cloud. It's not, they don't have it. The actual encryption key, the company doesn't have it because they designed it a trusted platform to where the only place that key lives is on the device, which is how it's supposed to be done. So, you know, when you know, the FBI says, hey, you have to give us the key to this, they don't have it to give. Have I beat that horse enough?
Oh yeah,
I think it may be dead, but I'm thoroughly enjoying watching the blood splatter. So feel free to keep swinging.
Like a Jackson Pollock at this point.
I mean, am I explaining it well enough?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm no issues with it.
Okay, Psychos is you know, giving me a Wikipedia article here to read on one-time pads. It's like, I know what a one-time pad is. I'm telling you, at a fund, you still have one key for the damn thing.
This is the heads up there, Psychos. You will not win. Moving right along. This is why Morps is doing a new show next week, starting on Thursday, called I Am Right with
Morps.
There
it is. There it is.
We've been making fun of this for years. You won't win. Just let it go.
For fuck's sake. Next one's from Washington Post. We've 100% tangential. Okay, fine. That's fine. I'm talking at a more basic level than what you're talking about. You're talking about a specific implementation, and it's cool. Don't get me wrong. One-time pads are great. I'm just
all right,
even lower
stick
level.
Fight's over.
That's fine.
Put the sticks down. Move on. Big okay. Fight later.
We've talked about this kind of stuff before, but Washington Post has another article about it. Because they're discovering it at more and more places now. Because, you know, we talked about it when it was Microsoft, and I think it was Google. Was that the other one we saw, or was it Facebook? Was Facebook the other article we did on the moderators losing their shit?
Facebook and both Google, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was Microsoft. Microsoft and Google.
Yeah, because the first time I did it, we thought it was, you know, some BS story, and then we started reading it. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, it was the first time you did it, it was Microsoft. And we're like, what are these guys seeing? It's Word. At least I was thinking that. But then it's like, oh yeah, Microsoft does a bunch of other stuff, and they can see horrible.
Yeah. Oh, he's okay. So Cycros didn't like the fact that I said brute force is the one attack against, because with a one-time pad, you're not supposed to be able to brute force it. If you have the ciphertext, you can still try to brute force it. It's just, you know. Anyways, you know, brute force will. The trick with brute force is if it's not working, you're not using enough. So, anyways, now the fact that enough brute force may not exist, you know, if you're trying to crack modern, you know, 8096 bit encryption or whatever you're up to nowadays, you know, with a modern cipher, you might be able to brute force it, but the heat death of the universe might occur first. So, until faster computers get invented. Let's see. After, let's see, this is content moderators at YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter see the worst of the web and suffer silently. A year after quitting his job, reviewing some of the most gruesome content the internet has to offer, Lester prays every week that the images he saw can be erased from his mind. Alcohol, my friend. At first, a contractor for YouTube and then for Twitter, so he went back for more.
Gotta build up, man.
Yeah. He worked on a high up floor of a mall in this traffic clogged Asian capital where he, it's from in Manila, where he spent 9 hours a day weighing questions about the details in those images. He made decisions about whether a child's genitals were being touched accidentally or on purpose, or whether a knife slashing somebody's neck depicted a real life killing, and if such content should be allowed online. Okay, anytime
no,
with the kid, just say
yes.
No. I mean,
yeah, exactly. No, yes, that was fucking easy.
There's no accidental touching of a junk.
Yeah, this is like, the only reason this guy is having fucking issues is because he's morally fucking questionable.
He's still haunted by what he saw today. Entering a tall building.
That he could leap out of in a single bound.
Triggers flashbacks to the suicides he reviewed, causing him to entertain the possibility of jumping. At night, he Googles footage.
Fucking hell, man. The internet's broken me because I've just gone off base jumping without a parachute. What about it?
It gets worse. At night, he Googles footage of bestiality and incest, material he was never exposed to before, but now is ashamed that he is drawn to. For the last year, he has visited a mall chapel every week where he works with a church brother to ask God to white out those images from his memory. I know it's not normal, but now everything is normalized, said the 33-year-old, using only his first name because of a confidentiality agreement he signed when he took the job.
Okay, see my previous statement. This man had questionable morals to start with because I understand that shit exists. I've seen some of it, and I'm not drawn to it. Because when asking myself, touching a children's genitals by accident, no. Suicide, yes. Fucking retard. Tell me this guy isn't questionable to start with.
I can't but do that. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm betting on it.
I mean... Yeah, it's, yeah. Workers such as Lester are on the front lines of the never-ending battle to keep the internet safe. So, according to the author here, Facebook, Google, and YouTube are the internet. Apparently, only social media sites are the internet, not anything else. Sorry.
They're the internet that's hiring people for this job.
Well, there's that.
Do you think 4chan has anyone reviewing what's been posted?
They have mods. Nice.
Oh, God, I don't want that job.
No, either do I. That janitor position at 4chan, is it even above me? Like, no, I don't want to see that shit. But, dude, if he's being drawn towards this sort of material after only being exposed to it by work...
There's something else going on here.
Is something fucking wrong with you to start with, man? Like, if you're seeing this at work and you're going, Jesus, that's bad... You're not going home to fap to it. This dude was morally fucking broken to start with.
Workers such as Lester are on the front lines and everything, but thousands of miles separate the Philippines and Silicon Valley, rendering those workers vulnerable to exploitation by some of the world's tech giants. In the last couple of years, social media companies have created tens of thousands of jobs around the world to vet and delete violent or offensive content, attempting to shore up their reputation after failing to adequately police content including live stream terrorist attacks and Russian disinformation spread during the U.S. presidential election. They just equated Russian shitposting with the dude going through the mosque.
Yeah. And
Donald
Trump.
I don't think you can screen for that. The whole live thing. That's what live is.
Yeah.
But they buy it all out to Donald Trump.
I'm sorry. That's the way this thing's written is just pathetic. Yet the firms keep these workers at arm's length, creating separation by employing them as contractors through giant outsourcing agencies. Workers here say that companies do not provide adequate support to address the psychological consequences of the work. They said they cannot confide in friends because the confidentiality agreements they signed prevent them from doing so. That it is tough to opt out of content that they see, and that the daily accuracy targets create pressure not to take breaks. The tech industry has acknowledged the importance of allowing content moderators these freedoms in 2015, signing on to a voluntary agreement to provide such options for workers who view child exploitation content, which most workers said they were exposed to. Fuck the fact that... So, okay... I think it sucks if part of your job is seeing this stuff. I've done investigations before and found it, and it's not fun when you see that shit. But this is when you call law enforcement and turn people in. You just say fuck this shit, and you call the professionals to deal with it. It's like at this point, I no longer want to be involved. This is now a law enforcement problem.
It sounds like this dude sees some child porn, goes, fuck this shit, reports it, and then goes home and beats off to bestiality.
Yeah.
He's not winning me over.
The technology hardware industry has long... Well, okay, this is the Washington Post, so they're assuming their readers are already predisposed to hate companies. The technology hardware industry has long operated by amassing armies of outsourced factory workers who make the world's smartphones and laptops under stressful working conditions, with sometimes fatal consequences. The software industry also increasingly leans on cheap and expendable labor, the unseen human toil that helps ensure artificial intelligence voice assistants respond accurately. Then it's not real artificial intelligence if you have some idiot Zachary in India translating it for them. And that self-driving systems can spot pedestrians and other objects, and that violent sex acts don't appear in social media feeds. The vulnerability of content moderators is most acute in the Philippines, one of the biggest and fastest-growing hubs of such work and outgrowth of the country's decades-old call center industry. Unlike moderators in other major hubs, such as those in India or the United States, who mostly screen content that is shared by people in those countries, workers in offices around Manila evaluate images, videos, and posts from all over the world. The workplaces... enormous burdens on them to understand foreign cultures and to moderate content in up to 10 languages that they don't speak while making several hundred decisions a day about what can remain online. In interviews with the Washington Post, 14 current and former moderators in Manila described a workplace where nightmares, paranoia, and obsessive ruminations were common consequences of the job. Several described seeing colleagues suffer mental breakdowns at their desks. One of them said he attempted suicide as a result of the trauma. Several moderators call themselves silent heroes of the internet, protecting Americans from the ills of their own society, and they say they become so consumed by the responsibility of keeping the web safe that they look for harmful content in their free time to report it. That should break you right there. At the end of my shift, my mind is so exhausted that I can't even think, said a Twitter moderator in Manila. He said he occasionally dreamed about being the victim of a suicide bombing or a car accident, and his brain recycling images that he reviewed during his shift. To do this job, you have to be a strong person and know yourself very well. The moderators work for Facebook. Facebook owned Instagram. Google owned YouTube, Twitter, and the Twitter owned video streaming platform Periscope, as well as other such apps, all through intermediaries such as Accenture or Cognizant. Each spoke on the condition of anonymity or agreed to the use of their first name only because of the confidentiality agreements that they were required by their employers and tech companies to sign. In interviews, tech companies officials said they have created many jobs in the industry, blah, 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 blah. So pretty much the whole article keeps going on and on and on about how terrible the social media companies are and how they're forcing these low-wage workers to view this horrible, horrible content. And, you know, how terrible they are for making them do it. But, you know, it is coming from all over the world. So that's, you know, one thing. And people post a lot of shit on the internet. They really do. So, you know, I can only imagine some of the horrible things that they're seeing people try to post. You know, animal cruelty, of course, the kitty porn, shit like that. And it probably would be on the companies that are actually doing the outsourcing, Accenture and Cognizant or whoever it is, because they're the actual employees here. They're taking contracts from YouTube and from Google and from Facebook to do the moderation. You know, just like any other contract worker, it's your employer who's responsible for your conditions, right? So, yep. You know, the company's running these, and of course the Post article goes on to, you know, the Post goes on and basically is blaming Google, YouTube, Facebook for all this content. But yeah, Cycros nailed it in one in the IRC there. You know, first hand, you guys need to censor this. The other hand, you guys are horrible for making your censors view this stuff. So I think Cycros nailed it in one on that one.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
You know, I feel for the people who have to view this shit day in and day out. You know, when I've done some investigative work in previous jobs, you occasionally find stuff you really didn't want to see. It's not pleasant, and, you know, you end up having to call law enforcement and, you know, see somebody get arrested for having really horrible images. It's not fun. You don't want to do it.
Satisfying part, knowing that the dude's probably going to get fucking shiv raped in jail.
Yeah, I mean, you know, somebody got what they deserved, sure. I never... You know,
what they've deserved isn't going to undo what happened to the kid.
No, I know, and it's not going to unsee what you've seen. But this is called the Big Blue Room, man. It's unpredictable. It's vicious, and there's only one true fucking rule, and that's life ends.
Right? Yeah, I mean, okay.
I just don't have any sympathy or empathy or anything for these people. A, they signed up for the job. If they don't know what the fucking world's like, why are they doing a job that involves the whole world?
I wonder what their pay is.
But I'd find the cop out. This is really fucking bugging me in this story that they're trying to get empathy out. They're trying to get you to feel empathetic towards this dude who goes, oh, I'm looking at the most horrific shit and I have to go home and jack off to bestiality. Nah, man, you lost me there.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, you know, I know for a fact that people have been arrested because of investigations I've done in the past. I know I've, result of my digging has gotten people fired. It's not a pleasant feeling. It's not a good feeling. So I understand some of where these guys are coming from, having to see this shit day in and day out. That's not... That's not the fault of the company that's hiring them to do it. It might be the fault of the company that is not adequately preparing them for it. But this also doesn't seem like a job you want. I don't know. I feel like there's you're right, because you know this guy's like, oh, you know, now I'm addicted to weird porn because I went to, you know, because of this job I'm doing, and you know how dedicated these people feel to, you know, do this stuff. And it's like, no, man, you've got some people who are some victims of corporate propaganda, and you've got some people who are taking some things upon themselves that they probably shouldn't. But in reality, there is some preparation work that probably should be done for this kind of job. You need to understand, this is the kind of content you're going to be seeing on a regular basis. And if you can't handle that, you don't need to be doing this job. So, I don't know. I mean, I see it both ways. I really do.
No, man, I can't get on board with the whole, it's on a fucking screen, therefore it's fucking me up. You're not a frontline fucking service worker. Piss off.
Well, there's certainly that.
I'll say it's less graphic than the cop that's dealing with it in person.
There you go.
But there's going to be some images I think could fuck with you if you see
it. Oh, no doubt. No doubt, man. And there's going to be those horrific ones that when you close your eyes at night for the next couple of weeks, you're going to see it in your head and there's nothing you can do about it. But welcome to the real world, motherfucker.
Fucking Harlequin babies.
There you go. And I just popped one into my head. The one the madman always circulates. One with the really red lips. Now you can see it. It's the real world, man. Fucking, I no empathy for these people.
Think they could rotate them out?
Yeah.
Like so many weeks on you're looking at the horrible, and then so many weeks of you're doing tech support over the phone.
I think it makes
the trauma worse.
I think it would be so many weeks of doing this, and then you're out, and we'll just rotate people out.
That's, you can't rotate people back into a position like that, because that's when the anxiety disorders start really bad. Because if you know you're a week out from seeing the worst shit in the world and you don't really want to do it, yeah, you're going to start feeling some pretty interesting anxiety issues.
Okay.
That's why R&R is not, the army doesn't really like giving people vacation time when there's war happening.
All right, next article is from Forbes. Fake Pornhub and Google Android apps are actually Russian spy tools.
Of course.
Why do you download a Pornhub app?
I don't know why people would do that. I don't know why people download half the apps they download. There's another article floating around right now about how all these browser extensions were all part of a network to collect information on people. And you go look at all the extensions they're talking about, and it's like, who the fuck would install this crap? It's like all survey stuff and super zoom and things like that. It's like, what is this? Who would install this? And apparently
someone does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Android spyware, allegedly created by one of the Russian government's go-to surveillance providers, has been discovered. Dun dun dun. Oh wait, where's the music? Not that one.
That one could also work.
Yeah, that one could. And it's hiding in fake apps that look just like Evernote, Google Play, Pornhub, and other massively popular Android apps. Evernote, Google Play, and Pornhub. That's
Pornhub. Dude, Pornhub's the big thing now. Wow.
The source of.
I was going to say, it saddens me, but yes, I could see Pornhub being a big thing.
Actually, Psychros just explained it in the IRC there. Apparently, the Pornhub app handles the VR capabilities pretty fluidly.
Wait, what?
Yup. That's what he said. He said apparently it's pretty good for VR. So,
that porn's on the cutting edge of all technology.
All right. The source of the malware apps is the blandly named Special Technology Center, according to a report released Wednesday by Canada-based researchers at the cybersecurity company Lookout. The St. Petersburg-based firm was last in the headlines after being hit with the sanctions by the Obama administration over the 2016 election hacks. I'm pretty sure most of it was just shitposting, but okay. The researchers found STC spyware hoovered up passwords and turned phones into listening devices. The tool, known as Monocle, can record home screens when phones are locked in order to scoop up passwords, snoop through predictive text dictionaries to learn the target's interests, record calls, and eavesdrop through the infected phone's microphone. The malware has been targeting Android phones since 2016 with a spike in activity early last year. It comes hidden inside fake versions of real apps, including Google Play, Evernote, Skype, encrypted messaging services Signal, and Pornhub. Looking at the selection of copied apps, Lookout said Monocle was likely targeting English speakers as well as individuals in the Caucasus regions and people interested in the Ahrar al-Sham militant group in Syria. The latter was based on the app titled Ahrar Maps. Anyone interested in a messaging app called Uzbek Chat, referencing the former Soviet Republic Uzbekistan, may also have been a target. Adam Bauer, Lookout senior security or senior staff security intelligence engineer, as a title, said it was impossible to tell what specific groups of English speakers were targeted given the breadth of those apps. It's very difficult to drive conclusions when they're very popular apps, he added. He also didn't know how the targets were being tricked into downloading the malware in the first place. Apple and Google have been made aware of the findings. Apple hasn't responded to a request for comment. Google said none of the apps are ever hosted on the Play Store. Android users should also receive a warning if the malware is detected on their device by Google Play Protect. So what this is, these are where, like if you go get the pirated apps, because there are, like if you jailbreak a phone or root your Android phone, or even on Android, you can just sideload different app stores. Like Samsung phones all come with two. They come with the Google Store and the Android Store. Amazon tablets, they don't even bother putting the Google Play Store on there. It's just the Amazon Store for apps. So you can load other stores on Android devices pretty simply. And there's a couple of them out there that are pretty much just for pirated copies of apps, so that instead of paying for them, you just download them through this interface, right? And so that's probably where most of these hacked apps are going, and why you're seeing things like Google Play being copied on there. So, you know, the answer there is don't install apps from weird places. You know, stick to the stores for your phone or stuff if you're worried about security. Or if you're, you know, not savvy enough, don't think you're savvy enough to spot fake, you know, malware copies of popular apps. Did I lose the team speak or just nothing to say?
No, man, I get nothing more on that one.
Okay, let's see. The last article I have for today is something I thought we would discuss a little bit. It's a Medium post from 10. And it says, don't put your work email on your personal phone.
That's a given.
Yeah. Many of us have given up on the idea of carrying around a dedicated work phone. After all, why bother when you can get everything you need on your personal smartphone? Here's one reason. Your work account might be spying on you in the background. When you add a work email address to your phone, you're likely to be asked to install something called a mobile device management profile. Chances are you'll blindly accept it. MDM is set up by your company's IT department to reach inside your phone in the background, allowing them to ensure your device is secure, know where it is, and remotely erase your data if your phone is stolen. Well, if you think that's all an MDM is doing.
You just keep thinking that.
Oh, I've ran them. I mean, they do all kinds of fun stuff. From your company's perspective, there are obvious security reasons for installing an MDM on an employee's phone. But for employees, it's difficult to tell what these invisible profiles are collecting behind the scenes, as they provide people with your company with invisible control over your device. That's why when it comes to your phone, no matter how much you trust your IT department, it's a good idea to keep work and pleasure separate. Just like any other computing device. So MDMs are interesting. Some of them intentionally create sandboxes. So, you know, inside of the MDM environment on your phone, you'll have like BlackBerry, and I think Good does this. and what's the other one? I can't think of it. But they, what they do is they create kind of a sandbox inside your phone, and then you'll have apps inside of that sandbox for email, work stuff, you know, document viewers, that kind of thing. And they can do a couple of things, like they can ensure that it's kind of a, everything inside that sandbox is kind of pseudo VPN'd over the MDM back into the company's network so that they can see what you're doing. And the other nice thing is with those sandbox ones, you know, let's say you leave the company, you quit, they don't have to erase the whole phone. They can just erase that sandbox portion so that you don't lose everything. You just lose the work documents. And the idea there is that you would keep the work stuff separate from your personal stuff on the device. Then you get to ones like Microsoft's Intune, and there's, you know, several others that, yeah, they install certificates and profiles straight up on the device, and yes, they can see everything you're doing on these devices. They'll install a certificate on the device and then management profiles, and yeah, basically they can erase it, they can delete it, they can see everything you do, they see everywhere you go. And there are very legitimate reasons for running things like that on, you know, BYOD devices. And that's because you need to be able to control, if you're a company, you need to control your company's data so that you don't have breaches and shit ending up on Pastebin or whatever. And it's not because they think your employees are going to steal the data. It's because you think your employee is going to get a, you know, going to install a fake Pornhub app and get their data stolen.
Or leave their phone at a bar, and then their phone's not their phone anymore.
Sure. There's all kinds of legitimate reasons for doing this stuff. So, but the rest of this Medium article is talking about, you know, how, you know, how MDM gives companies control over your stuff. Track your location, install a corporate VPN. This means they can route your traffic through the network the company owns so they can see all your traffic. It provides a one-way mirror into your life with no way to peer back. Apparently Hexnode is one that does measures worker productivity. And it's, you know, and do you trust your admin? A bad actor in the IT department could abuse their access to track employee location or peer into the private lives of people without them ever knowing it's happening. Fear! Fear! Okay. So the rest of this article, let's explain it. MDMs, yes, absolutely can give a company a lot of view into what you do with the device. They certainly can. He's not wrong. At the same time, most companies aren't sitting there peering through your shit. They don't have time for it. What they're doing is they're either trying to meet a regulatory requirement or they're trying to keep their data from getting stolen by viruses or incompetence or crypto locker kind of stuff. So, yeah, they put those kind of controls on your device. The best thing to do, seriously, is if your company wants you to install an MDM solution on your phone to get work email on your personal device, one, reconsider if you want to use personal device. You know, you can go buy dedicated tablets and shit like that fairly cheap. You know, you can go to Walmart and get an Android tablet for less than $100 if you wanted a dedicated device for your work stuff. Or just have a little bit of discipline and do work on work company, your company provided things. Ask if the company will provide a phone if they need to do that, if it's, you know, appropriate. Or ask them what MDM they're using. Do some research and understand if it's one that does sandboxing and understand what the capabilities of it are, because they vary. They vary a lot. You know, if you can, and if you can do multiple devices so that you've got one that, you know, one's for work and one's for personal, hey, that's great. But, yeah, it's just like anything else, right? If you're doing bring your own device to work, understand that your company is going to want to impose some controls over that so they don't lose control of their data. I don't blame them for that. I really don't. And most admins are not sitting there poking through your shit because they don't have time for it. And believe me, they got tired of reading your email a long time ago.
That's because most people are boring. I have really entertaining email. I keep the admins in mind when I'm composing email.
All right. Well, all the email I've read, I get really tired of reading other people's email really quickly.
They need to become more creative. With some GIFs, maybe some sound. But
that would be kind of fun, wouldn't it? You're sitting there doing an investigation, and then just one of the notes says, "Hi, Morps." It's just,
yeah. Hi, Morps. Now you'd be getting bored. Check out this clip.
He's sending you a YouTube link or something.
Look, kittens.
Then below that parentheses, the kittens are actually the virus. I've got you now.
Son of a bitch. Always the kittens. They got me again.
Maybe I'm weird, but I'm kind of the opinion if they need me to work at home on stuff they want to control, they can provide me the stuff.
And that's not a bad attitude to have. It's really not.
If it's my PC, I control my PC.
Yep.
If it's your PC, I will keep it as your PC. I will only do the stuff that you want me to do on it. And you can have complete control over it.
And again, that comes back to things like, you know, do I really give a shit what you do on that computer when you're not working? No, I don't. And from an IT perspective, I don't care if you're looking at weird websites. I care if you get a virus. I care if you get, you know, the data compromised. I care if you get your password stolen, because then I'm going to have to go fix it, right? You know, you get CryptoLocker installed on your laptop because you're looking at weird porn after work, and then come back in the next day and it starts spreading throughout the network. Oh, great! Now I've got a lot of work to do because somebody was doing something weird. So, you know, now you've got a whole bunch of people who can't work because the systems are down. That's why companies put these kind of controls in place. It's not because they give a fuck what you're doing on your phone at a bar at 3 a.m. Most sysadmins don't have time for it, I promise you. They're too busy trying to keep the damn system working, understaffed and underfunded. They're not going to take the time to sit there and dig through it and go, "Ooh, gee, I wonder what somebody's doing." Now, that said, I have seen somebody who is the head of a department install a system to spy on employees. Or caught them installing a system to spy on employees. I don't know if it's been long enough to talk about that one.
Probably best practice not to for now.
Let's just say somebody in a position of authority was reading emails that they really shouldn't and kind of abusing their position.
I'd wait at least 7 years before telling that story.
I think I still got the write-up somewhere because it was fantastic. Because I didn't know that's who it was. I honestly thought the thing was breached. When I found it. And I thought it was breached because I breached it.
I know what you're talking about.
I hacked into the damn thing and then saw somebody else was already in it. Fuck!
There's always a bigger fish.
Yep. Yeah, that's a... Anyways, let's move on to this. First thing for you tonight in Digital Dojo, this is interesting. It's a website called Hacktail, and what they're doing is they've created simulation games, which honestly look like point-and-click flash adventures. I haven't played much of them yet, but at least watching the video of it and looking at it, it kind of looks like it's going to be a little, kind of a point-and-click kind of ordeal. But they're trying to gamify information security training. So that's cool. It's a different approach.
Yeah.
I don't much care that, you know, they you have to give them an email address to get access to it. But, you know, it's through Komodo. So obviously it's a marketing thing. But at the same time, neat approach. And, worth checking out if you're wanting to learn some of this stuff. It's probably going to be kind of on the basic side, truth be told. But, it's something. And then RU sent me this one. I was aware of it, but RU wanted us to talk about it, and that is startpage.com, which is a extremely private, doesn't keep logs search engine. That's an alternative to Google.
It's really good. I'm using the shit out of it.
So if you go to their About Us page, you know, they're talking about how big tech companies collect our private data, Facebook, Uber, and Equifax, and how vulnerable that information can be. So at start page, they don't. Where was it? They basically say they don't keep logs. And I know a lot of people have used it for a long time, but I don't believe I've ever actually talked about it on Decking. So there it is.
It would have been great to know about this after we got the great virtual signal band, man. Would have loved to have known this place. But it works well. It's super quick. Yeah, it's good. It's no powerhouse to Google, but... if you've got websites blocked by your ISP and you just don't feel that that's justified, this will let you straight back out without downloading anything. No monthly fee. It's great.
They apparently are running an email service too, Start Mail. So,
well, I didn't know that. But yeah, it's got my tick of approval, man. I can't get over how quick it is, to be honest.
So. That's all I've got for today. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, unless the news considers to be shitty. No, DuckDuckGo doesn't keep logs either.
I think DuckDuckGo doesn't have a VPN.
No. StartMail costs. Their email service costs, but. Yeah, so DuckDuckGo is just a search engine. Start page is actually proxying some, doing some other things too. We actually have it blocked at work because proxy avoidance, because it kind of is. But anyways, of course, listening to the stream, we're always working out Pure Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site, and the subreddit. Tonight in the IRC, we had myself, Sardonic, Psychros, Her Rats, and Madman. Speaking of Madman, closing thoughts.
No, YouTube killed my closing thought.
Okay.
Karen Wojcicki got to him.
Damn it!
Fucking ninjas over at Facebook.
All right, are you?
Not sure if IHN this week, if everyone's around, we'll do one. If not, fuck, we'll play some video games, talk some shit, and drink some beer.
Well, we know you're hunting for that waifu vending machine.
Yeah, thanks for that story, dude.
I need to buy more beer.
All right, that's it. Don't have to go home, but you're not staying here because I'm closing the thing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Dansko nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.
Tauntauns, Mr. President.